Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101-night sleep trial and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices. Up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep. Upgrade your life. Ghostbed. The coolest beds in the world.
To me, there's nothing more attractive than a confident woman. Like, same. Truly. And to me, that energy, that bad bitch energy, that confident energy supersedes any of my preconceived notions or judgment, right? It almost stomps away because that is attractive. Because that to me is like, oh yeah, like,
that's a good point.
Hello, friends. I'm Rosie Acosta, author, mindfulness teacher, and wellness coach.
And I'm Tessa Tovar, producer, co-host, and your partner in Real Talk for all things wellness and beyond.
Welcome to the Radically Well podcast. This is a space where we break down the messy, transformative moments that make us who we are, because wellness isn't about perfection. It's about embracing the journey.
Every week, we'll tackle the topics no one talks about, but everyone needs to hear, like navigating hormones, aging, relationships, sex, and self-care.
You'll hear unfiltered stories, expert advice, and real, relatable conversations that empower you to reset your mindset, reimagine your health, and show up as your most authentic self. Whether you're here to learn, laugh, or maybe cry a little, this is your space to feel seen, supported, and inspired to live radically well.
So grab your favorite tea or, hey, maybe a glass of wine, and let's dive in.
Let's get radically well. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Radically Well podcast. I'm joined by my very own host, producer, friend, Tessa Tovar.
Hello.
I love the hello. As your self-proclaimed hormone besties, we're going to continue this conversation about hormones, aging, body confidence, body image, because we had such a great conversation with Louise Hazel and we've had some really great feedback, and so we just thought we would continue this conversation with you all. So I wanted to start, if we could, right away.
Lay it on me.
So this is from a 2021 study of the National Bureau of Economic Research. They found that women over 40 are perceived as less employable and less attractive, a reflection of societal biases against aging women. So this stigma, I feel like, absolutely goes beyond this sort of workplace statistic. I think not only is it a factor, yes, but the fact that these kinds of stigmas affect our confidence, our self-worth, our body image are pretty poignant, right? And so I was thinking about this a lot when Tori and I were watching the Golden Globes when Demi Moore won. I don't know if you got to see it.
I didn't.
But it was, she goes, I didn't. It was a real sort of like heart-filling, empowering moment. Yeah. Because this woman has been in Hollywood for, I think she said more than like 40 years or something. Like a really long time. Yeah. And I've been a fan ever since Ghost. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. And I read her book. Tori and I actually read it together. I mean, she really is one of the most inspiring women, I think, of our time, especially when it comes to entertainment. One thing that I found really interesting that Nikki Glaser, who was the host of the Golden Globes, said that women in their 50s, when they do something really noteworthy, they call it a comeback, but when it's a man, they usually cast him with a younger model and say congratulations, right? Mm-hmm. It's sort of the disparity between the two, which is something that I think we still fight against, right? This whole,
oh my God,
this idea of like aging and body image and confidence. Like there's just so much here. So anyway,
you're saying it with this huge smile on your face. I'm just like getting more and more angry as you continue.
Well, I'm laughing because I just think it's ridiculous, right? Because it's something that part of me is, do we perpetuate it, right? With using the filters, with the diet culture, with
dyeing our gray hair,
hello? Injecting our face, like. Yeah. Again, we've had these conversations in the past. I am all about it. I'm not one of these people that's like against plastic surgery or anything like that. I'm like, if it makes you feel good, do it. Whatever is going to make you feel your best for you. I think that where it gets a little bit nebulous, so to speak, is when we start to merit our value with how we look or what our job is.
Yeah, that's interesting. No, I like that perspective. I think that's really helpful. It's a helpful reframe because it's like going back to the why of what you're doing. You know, does it make you feel better about yourself? Does it make you feel less than worthy? Like, you know, kind of like check in and see what's the impetus behind this. Like I mentioned dyeing my hair because I just did. I'm not naturally this blonde. I don't know if you could tell. I had this conversation with my mom like 5 years ago when I started to see the first grays, and I was in my mid-30s, and I called her up and I was like, Mom, when did you start getting gray hair? And she said, yeah, about that time, mid-30s. And I kind of got upset that she didn't warn me. I felt like, but why didn't you tell me that this was coming in my mid-30s? I thought I had 15 more years. And I just think it's so interesting because we equate youth with beauty, that as we start to see the lines and, you know, the grays and like the spots on our hands, that suddenly it's like, wait a minute, am I still beautiful?
Yeah.
You know, I have this kind of conversation with myself, and does that matter? You know, and I mean, and why do I care? So been having that conversation with myself a lot lately.
Yes, let's talk about it, because I think one of the most difficult things for me in my process of getting older, again, having this conversation so many times, but in my process when I was going through perimenopause and I, you know, had gained almost 40 pounds, I felt so unattractive. You know, I've talked about that before as well. I felt so not in my body, didn't feel confident.
Yeah.
You know, the gray hairs are coming in. You start to, your clothes doesn't fit you. You're changing. I mean, visibly, there's a change that's happening. And when you're not prepared for it, it can be very jarring. And I don't know that there is a way to prepare for it, but at the same time, it's, is that something that's, is it bad? is it bad to change and to age? And the only reason why we feel the way that we do is because we've been conditioned to believe that aging is bad. Mm-hmm. Everything is anti-aging, anti-this, anti-that. Like, just basically don't be where you are. Don't age.
Right.
Stay young forever. And there is this internal conflict that I think, for me, I can speak for myself, that happens within me where, yeah, I'm 40. Even though I went into early menopause, I still want to look good. I still want to be able to have sex. Like, I still want to be able to feel attractive to my partner. Mm-hmm. And how do we toe the line between something that makes me feel good and what society thinks I should be doing? Right. So I don't think I told you this, but there was a couple of weeks ago, I posted this video, and one of my friends, I think maybe I may have said this to you or not, but she sent me we're just kind of having this conversation because she was saying, oh, you look so great. Like, congratulations on your transformation. It looks like you're really happy, you know, whatever. I'm like, yeah, no, I feel really good. And I hope that you can sense that. And she goes, yeah, like, now all you have to do is, you know, like, do a little Botox, you know, like, go. Basically, she was saying it in the way of join the dark side, like, join us, you know, in the Botox club.
Like, seriously? Like,
yeah, she was being serious, because I think her big thing is like, you know, you will feel so much better. And I'm not against it. Again, it's like, I am not against plastic surgery again, by, you know, I'm not against it. Mm-hmm. But in that moment, I went back and I'm like, what is she seeing? Like, what did she see that I didn't see? And then all of a sudden it creates an insecurity, right? Or or you say something a certain way and somebody points out, oh, you said this wrong, right? It creates a certain,
like, a stigma almost, like, or a seed is planted.
Yeah, seed is planted that you didn't even realize
you,
yeah,
quote unquote, needed. And I don't think you need it, but I would agree with you that I'm pro-choice in the realm of, like, do what you want with your body. And
yeah,
plastic surgery, if it makes you feel good about yourself, do it. Just understand your why, I'd say.
Yeah. It reminds me of when, do you remember when Alicia Keys was on The Voice? She wasn't wearing makeup. Do you remember
about that? Yes.
Yeah. Or I don't remember. Was it American Idol or The Voice? Do you know? So when Alicia Keys was doing the choose the best singer show, the show, and she wasn't wearing makeup. And I remember I saw this quote, or I read it somewhere, where she was wearing makeup, and then one of the other hosts, I think it was Adam Levine, came out to her and was like, oh, I thought you don't wear any makeup. And she goes, I'll do whatever I damn well please.
Like, you're allowed to change your fucking mind.
Yeah.
Like, so, I mean, I've been experimenting with that personally. I don't, only because I don't like to take the time to put makeup on, but I do love it in its artistic form, and it's kind of fun to play with colors and different shapes. Like, you can make your eyes look different shapes. That's like a form of artistic expression, just like we adorn ourselves with clothes and jewelry and getting the nails done and stuff. I don't think there should be any shame in that. Like, do it. If it makes you feel empowered and you enjoy it. But yeah, I was just thinking about that, because it's like, we have this. So Alicia Keys, for example, when Adam gave her a little bit of pushback, like, oh, I thought you swore off makeup and makeup was the devil. And then she's like, well, fuck you, basically. I mean, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, Alicia Keys. I'm sorry. But I just found that to be, like, so empowering both ways.
Yes.
Wear the makeup or don't wear the makeup, but don't let anybody tell you you can't change your mind.
Yeah.
You absolutely can.
And especially being, there was a one experience I had. I'm not going to say where I was, but I was teaching at an event that's very well known to host many wellness people and teachers and such. And I was wearing makeup and whatever. And so this person came up to me and said, you know, I think that people would take you more seriously as a teacher if you didn't wear any makeup. Huh. And the reason why he said it in the way that he did, in the context of the conversation we're having, I think he was, what he was trying to say, and I say it in that way because I don't know that he was trying to be demeaning by any means. Mm-hmm. I think what his intention was to say that I should focus more on being authentic mm-hmm. rather than how I look. Mm-hmm. And this person didn't know me, mm-hmm. didn't know my background, didn't know really what I did, and was just doing that thing of assuming from the outside, seeing somebody perhaps that's caring about their appearance in the context of wellness and sort of making this comment about how authenticity is more important than what you look like. And he's not wrong. It is true. Both things can be true. It's like you can focus on authenticity, but you can also do what you want to feel good in your skin and in your body. And
that can be authentic too. Like, why can't...
Yeah, and it can, but I think about it in terms of... I was very triggered when that happened, and I remember calling Tori right away and being like, this is why I fucking hate doing this kind of shit with people that I would never interact with in a normal context, right? Yeah.
That's just like the, somebody to have that kind of opinion. And maybe like it was
the audacity,
his place, but yeah,
it was not his place at all.
That feels to me like a boundary that's been crossed. Like it's not his, I don't really care who this guy was, but like, I don't think that was his place to say anything about how you show up and present yourself as a wellness person.
Yeah. But at the same time, if I'm really honest, and I could totally just be like a raw and authentic, my raw and authentic self on my own show.
Oh, please do. Yes.
I also find that if there is a person that is, let's say, overtly over
the unsolicited advice.
No, I think when I see a person in the world of wellness who is too concerned about how they look, mm-hmm. and you can discern what that means for yourself, for me, it creates a little bit of a cognitive dissonance. Mm. I'll give you an example. If somebody's trying to teach me about self-love and self-acceptance, and they've had a lot of plastic surgery, mm-hmm. clearly, I have a hard time with that.
Yeah, I could see that.
Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Yeah. So it makes it challenging for me, if I'm really honest, mm-hmm. to say, okay, yeah, I'm into self-love, self-acceptance, be who you are at your fullest, but visually, the aesthetic that I'm seeing is not aligning with what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Because clearly you have been dissatisfied with something or many things about your original appearance to now look a certain way, mm-hmm. right? But that is twofold. Mm-hmm. Because number one, that's my shit. That's my judgment that I have to deal with, and it has nothing to do with this person. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if that person's on a stage talking about all this stuff and then goes home and is like just wanting to make another appointment because they saw a little line on their face, that's the sort of cognitive dissonance. Do you understand what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
It does, yes. But I feel like there's almost like this insidious thing that we're ascribing to plastic surgery as a standalone. And in context, I think, if we could zoom out a little bit as a society and realize we do that with our bodies, but we call it fitness.
Okay.
You know, like we'd look at our bodies in the mirror wearing a bikini, especially as women, and like we don't fit the mold. So we hit the gym harder and we want to lose that 10 pounds or whatever. And we call that fitness.
Right.
We're not saying, oh, she's being vain. she's fit. Like, look at your transformation, look at what you did for your body and your health and your wellness. Yeah. And in that same way, there's all this societal pressure to look a certain way because that means you're healthy or you fit that standard. But
And I hear what you're saying, and I agree, because even I posted a video about this, but I'm like, there was nothing wrong with how I looked like prior to my transformation.
Agreed.
Because even as I've discussed here, on paper, I was healthy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
On paper, my hemoglobin A1C, all of my, although a little high on the cholesterol, et cetera, mm-hmm. I was healthy. And, you know, look, my partner was still having sex with me. Like, I was fine, mm-hmm. you know, like there's nothing wrong with her. But the issue I was having is I didn't feel good. But then
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. But here's the question. Yeah. But the question is really, did you not feel good because you didn't look good?
That's what I'm asking. Exactly my point. This is what I'm saying about the societal pressure to, and we're like, oh, it's better when, you know, somebody's losing weight because we can say, oh, well, that's for health reasons. But if this person looks in the mirror and they see a crooked chin, like I look in the mirror and I see, well, one side of my jaw is longer than the other. And I've always wanted to fix that. There's so many actors and actresses out there that have had plastic surgery on their face to make them look more symmetrical, because that's what we ascribe beauty to, is a symmetrical face. Mm-hmm. But it's like socially okay if we're losing the weight because that means we're becoming fit.
Yeah. So it's really bringing it back to yoga. It's really a question of discernment. Mm-hmm. No, it's not a question. It's really a matter of discernment.
Yes.
It's a matter of finding balance and, again, understanding the why.
Yeah.
And being very clear with why you're doing what you're doing and who you're doing it for. Mm-hmm. Clearly, you know, for me, I like to think that I'm a pretty intuitive person. And if somebody's trying to sell me something and it doesn't feel genuine or authentic, like, I'm not going to buy it. Mm-hmm. Because it feels disingenuous to me.
Yeah.
And whether I'm getting that impression because of the external presentation of that, or I'm getting it from an internalized resonance, I have to be able to explore that. And I also have to be able to explore my internal biases as well. Mm-hmm. I can't just put it on the other person, like, they're just insecure. That's why they're doing that.
Right.
And disregard a message, or, you know, it could just be my own internalized whatever conditioning.
Well, I think that's like underscore bold highlight that statement, because at the end of the day, when we're looking at somebody else and judging their decisions to do the plastic surgery or not, to wear the makeup or not, to lose the 10 pounds or not, that judgment, it's always context-based. And also, like, you got to look at yourself in the mirror and go, like, what is it in me that sees a judgment in that person for making that decision for themselves? Because maybe that makes them truly happy.
Yeah.
Maybe that gives them that level of confidence to go apply for that job or ask for that raise.
Or feel good naked.
Yeah, fuck. I mean, yeah.
Hello. Like,
can you imagine? I mean, wow.
Yeah, I can. I'm into it. That's the thing. Like,
naked.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And that's the thing. I think for women to be able to feel, to me, there's nothing more attractive than a confident woman.
Yeah.
Like, same. Truly. And to me, that energy that, you know, like, bad bitch energy, that confident energy supersedes any of my preconceived notions or judgment, right? It almost stomps away, because that is attractive. Mm-hmm. Because that to me is like, oh yeah, like
that's a good point.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. I forgot. That's a really key element to this conversation. I think it's like another one that, aside from the judgment, like, it's, I always tell Jorge this when he shaves his mustache.
Oh my God.
because he does it. He says he does it for me because I like a mustache. I'm going to out myself here. But he doesn't do it with confidence because he feels awkward when he shaves his mustache. And I'm like, babe.
Wait, so you like the mustache or you don't like the mustache?
I like it. Okay. However, I like a mustache, period, on a guy that rocks it with confidence. Jorge shaves his mustache.
And loses his confidence.
Well, he feels awkward. Like, yeah. he's not owning the mustache.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you can see that right away.
Yeah.
Like, you can acknowledge the essence of the person and you can see their characteristic with that one glance. It's that same thing. So that's really key and important. And another thing to include into this little recipe we're creating about, like, body image and self-confidence.
Yeah. I also love facial hair. Tori and I were just talking about this. He's shaved. I can count on one hand of the times he's shaved his beard. And I'm like, I hate your face. Like, I literally, and he's a handsome guy, all that. But I need a man with facial hair.
Why? What do you think that's about?
I just think it's sexy. Mm-hmm. And I just love it.
Yeah. But do you think, okay, if we were to peel it one layer deeper.
Because it's hot.
Does it have anything to do with, like, how a man looks like a man versus a man looks like a boy?
You know, I love men.
Yes.
And all, I love, no pun intended. I love men. And certain men don't look good with facial hair, right? Certain ones. But to me, it's like I've always been attracted to men with facial hair. I mean, if we're really digging deep, it could be because, you know, like, it's opposite of, like, my dad. My dad's clean face. He's always been clean face. He did not have facial hair. Maybe it's kind of like, you know, the opposite of that.
Yeah,
that's one thing. But I feel like... Yeah, there's a strength of, I don't know what it is. Maybe it is like a manly thing. I just like a rugged man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I love a rugged man who rocks the facial hair, who works with his hands. I'm going to start describing everything that Tori does. You know what I mean. But that's a different, I'm like, that's it. We're going off on a tangent. But yeah, there's something about it that I really, I just really love that. I don't know what it is.
That facial hair.
Sexy. Yeah.
Anyways.
Anyway. Okay, wait. No, coming back to what we were saying. No, about the confidence piece and feeling and sort of like what creates confidence. Mm-hmm. You know what's interesting is, there is an association, obviously, between body and feeling good and everything that comes along with that. And I know that for me, even just the changes that my body's gone through with the hormonal changes, with perimenopause, now being in postmenopause, and just feeling sexier and more confident and more embodied.
Yeah.
And to me, it's not a matter of like, oh, I want to feel. To me, it's more the feeling of confidence, right? It's more the feeling of, I love working out. I love the endorphins I get when I move my body, but I also love to feel how strong my body feels. Mm-hmm. And yeah, aesthetically, you know, we get to enjoy this meat sack for a handful of years before things start to look different. And so I think, you know, if you don't use it, you lose it. So we have to be able to take care of what we have in the best way possible, but also not to attach so much of our worth to how we look on the outside, right? Because I did. And I think that was part of what was most difficult during my perimenopause stage, mm-hmm. was the fact that my body was changing. And every time I would get out of the shower and look in the mirror, I would feel like, mm-hmm. I did not like the reaction that I would have. Mm-hmm. It was not kind and just the negative self-talk that would just start right away. It's like I'd get out of the shower and I'd be like, ugh, you know? Mm-hmm. And it didn't matter how many times my partner would say, you're beautiful, like I'm so attracted to you, whatever it is, you know, it didn't matter, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I think the slippery slope becomes when you are at a place where you're healthy and you feel good and somebody says you look great and then you still don't see it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think at that point, it's a different type of conversation about confidence and self-worth. But in order for us to, I think, navigate this conditioning of body image and aging and self-worth, we really need to establish what that means for us, yeah. not what society is telling us, and not playing the game of comparison with other people. Ugh. And it's hard.
That's hard. Yeah.
For us back in the day was magazines.
Yeah.
It was looking through the magazines and seeing, you know, like the celebrities out and about or whatever it was, fashion magazines with the heroin chic, like we've talked yeah. about. And now it's social media. It's, you know, videos that perhaps have been highly edited or
all the
filters yeah. and such.
Well, so I have a question for you though, on the topic of like, it kind of stems back to the comment that your friend made about like, oh, well, you've made this transformation. Now all you have to do is, and I thought you were going to say maintain instead of like regain. Mm. And so I guess my question around that is if, you know, because you've always loved working out and exercising. Mm-hmm. If you feel like you have a healthy relationship still to the gym and weight training and exercise, or if it feels like it ever borders on that line of like obsession and I have to maintain this and the fear of losing it, because I think we can go through a transformation like yeah. what you've been through and feel like I don't want to go back there.
Sure. There's a fear. Yeah, of course. That's a great question. And definitely something that I've thought about in the last even 6 months, right? So it's been a while. I think I started my transformation journey mid-May. So I've had time during my transformation and now post, right? And I've still been able to sort of maintain mm-hmm. the, let's call them gains that I've had since. Mm-hmm. And I did notice that there was a point where there was fear mm-hmm. about like, oh, I don't want to have sugar.
Yeah.
Don't want to eat sugar, or I don't want to eat that, or I don't want to go out too late, or there was a rigidity. But I've just practiced for so long that the minute I feel that rigidity, because I have struggled with an eating disorder when I was younger, it creates this alert within myself where I sort of release mm-hmm. and I'm like, oh, there's that rigidity. Oh. There's that old friend yeah. rigidity. I don't call it like obsession, right? Mm-hmm. It's very rigid. She gets very sort of too hyper-focused. Mm-hmm. And I have to be able to release and be like...
Because there's natural seasons where your body will... Like winter is a yeah. natural time where we, as a human race, like tend to gain yeah. weight if we live in colder climates
sure.
because fat insulates and keeps us from getting...
Yeah. And you want to be able to live your life. And that was the premise of, if, you know, I did create my own 12-week program where I incorporated a lot of the, you know, eating patterns, protocols that I did with the addition of mindfulness practices, mm-hmm. giving yourself enough grace and space to be able to do all of the things to make it a more holistic approach. Because I feel like that's what, to me, that's what's been sustainable. Because I want to be able to have treats.
Yeah.
I love chocolate. Yeah. Like I love to be able to just not think about it. You don't want to constantly be thinking, oh, I just don't want to go back. I don't want to go back. It's
or like I can't afford the calories for that
yeah.
kind of mindset. Well, yeah. So what does that practice look like for you on a regular basis?
It's just like anything else, like balance. Like I still eat very healthy and clean foods most of the time. Mm-hmm. But there's, you know, 20 to 30% of the time where I want to eat whatever I want, and that's okay. And I allow myself, I mean, I was in India for a month. Like I ate everything, mm-hmm. you know, I ate all the food I did all of the things, and I just let myself live. You know, my issue was never the food situations I was having were because I was coping with my emotions. Mm, yeah. So it wasn't necessarily like I did create bad habits. I don't want to call them bad. I was experiencing unhealthy habits because I was coping. Mm-hmm. That was my coping mechanism. And food's always been my way of coping because I don't have any other vices. You know, it's like, yeah. I don't drink coffee. I don't drink alcohol. Like so what is my thing? And my thing is food and sugar. And I love food. And that's my reward. It's my sort of go-to coping mechanism. And so once I was able to shift that and see the changes in my body and see how it affected my mood and see how it affected my hormones and have the actual data, it makes me feel more in control. Whereas before, it was food that had power over me. So you just shift the power dynamic. So then that fear, that rigidity doesn't even come into play anymore because it's like, no, I make the choice. It wasn't like, oh, I let myself have whatever. It's like, I can have whatever I want. I just understand the consequences of having too much of X, Y, and Z. And if I want to sort of maintain what I have, I also know what to do. That means if we're going to have a weekend of people are staying with us and we're eating, we're snacking, we're going out to eat, it's like you let yourself have the experience and then you just reset, right? It's a reset, not, oh, now I have to take away. Yeah. It's like a punishment for allowing yourself to live. But it's a balance, and it really requires a deep level of discernment and self-inquiry and discomfort.
Yeah. So it really is, it sounds like for you, a mindset, it's an awareness of a mindset shift and also like the kind of self-talk. And also, I think my follow-up question to that is, so you describe food as being the thing that had the power over you in the past. I always wonder about when we, it's kind of like playing whack-a-mole. When you Yes. squash one thing, Mm-hmm. does the power shift to another kind of insidious behavior? Or do you feel like you've got a nice balance going on here?
No, I think that it definitely, I think with everything, right? You have to sort of, I think that it's inevitable for the energy to shift to something else. Mm-hmm. I did notice, like I'm like talking and I did notice that when I first started my program in the beginning, because I quit everything, right? The sugar, like that meant no sugar, no alcohol, no sweet, anything, like no fruit. It was basic.
Austere.
Yeah. And I noticed that in a way there was also like a dopamine fast. And, you know, there was a little bit of that brain reset that was happening as well. And I did notice that, and I read Dopamine Nation by Dr. Anna Lemke, who we will have on the show, hopefully. We want to have on the show. And I did interview her for Radio Headspace. So I have had a conversation with her. And, you know, so dopamine is a feel good endorphin. It's part of, you know, our brain system that it's like the reward based mechanism that makes us feel aroused, excited, you know, satisfied. But I noticed that when I took away all of those feel good things, and I also was very mindful about my consumption with social media, you know, anything that was giving me too much, it was a true detox in the sense of sort of, you know, going into the cave. Like I had to become a recluse in a way to just sort of take myself away from anything overstimulating. But what I notice is that there's other desires.
Right.
That got really...
like loud?
Very loud.
Yeah.
Like...
can't turn the volume down.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like, okay, she's trying to supplement now what she's not getting with this other thing, you know? So I found that was really interesting, just going back to what you were saying about the whack-a-mole. And you have to just pay attention, right? That's part of mindfulness practice, is to be able to become familiar with, to become aware of what's happening inside, to just pay attention to what your tendencies are so that you can begin to modify your behavior. But it was really, really interesting. It leveled out after a while, but I definitely see that as one of the challenges.
Do you see that as something that's necessary to go through in order to have this reset because of maybe an oversaturation of getting dopamine everywhere all the time from our social media, from our food, from overconsumerism? I mean, do we have to go so far as to become a recluse?
So your question, if I'm hearing you correctly, is do we have to face discomfort to have change?
Yes and no. And I don't mean like I'm asking about a level of discomfort,
okay,
meaning like a very extreme, austere level, like recluse.
Yeah.
Because I get that there's value to, you know,
yes, the good stress.
Like Jeff talks about. But what I'm wondering, because our bodies, like it creates dopamine when we have relationship with one another. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We need dopamine, you know, so we take it away. Is it important to take it away completely for a period of time?
Well, Dr. Anna Lemke and Jeff, who you're talking about, is Jeff Krasnow. So those of you, if you're watching this and you've not seen the episode with Jeff Krasnow and Skylar Grant, his book, Good Stress, definitely check it out. But does it have to be for a long period of time? So Dr. Anna Lemke, she talks about doing a 30-day dopamine fast. Mm-hmm. So I mean, we're getting into a whole nother, and we are going to talk about this also, but this is getting into the conversation about addiction and things that we overconsume. And in order for us to really sort of get a reset, that's her recommendation, is to do it for 30 days. Like whatever the thing is, can you take it out, whether it's pornography, whether it's alcohol, whether it's sugar, whether it's caffeine, whatever it is. Take it out of your lifestyle for 30 days and just see what happens. Mm-hmm. But the sort of receptors in your brain, from what I understand from reading her book, and this is very neuroscience-y, so maybe we can get a neuroscience expert on the show to talk about this, is that once you've taken out that external, that exogenous substance, let's say if it's a substance, mm-hmm, then your brain begins to sort of reset and create those, recharge the dopamine receptors in your brain, from my understanding. Mm. Yeah. Mm. So going back to what your question is, like, does it have to be for...
I guess I'm wondering if it's... because the way that I hear you talk about it sounds like the... whether or not it was a goal, the outcome was that you removed a lot of the dopamine, like with the social media, with the food.
Yeah, but I'm an extremist. That's the thing. So I'm like, I am an extremist, and that's part of my gift, but it's also one of my biggest flaws, is because I go in from one end of the spectrum to the other, and that's why mindfulness practice and yoga is so effective for me, because I need to be able to hold two things at the same time. Yeah. How do I find that middle path? How do I find the balance between two things so that it's helpful and it's sustainable? Mm-hmm. Ultimately, that's what you want to look at. It's like short-term gains. Yeah, that's great. You know, 12 weeks, you know, I lost almost 30 pounds. It's been 40 pounds since, but I lost 30 pounds in 12 weeks. That was a commitment.
Yeah.
I mean, that was 90 days of no days off, mm-hmm, no cheat. I'm going to do air quotes, no cheat days. This was like 90 days of, can I do something this difficult I knew I could, but I also felt like, what did I learn in this process? Would I do it again? I mean, that's really the question.
And would you do it again?
Of course. Yeah. 100% I would. I would do things differently now because I feel like it was important for me to have the amount of level of discomfort that I had. Mm-hmm. And I see still today the benefits of that, but I also see how that's not for everybody. Mm-hmm. And that was actually one of the reasons why I decided to create my own system, because I felt like there were steps that were missing in that sort of rigidity of a program that's 90 days,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's, I mean, circling it back to our conversation, because really what we're talking about today is body image, not just body image, but it sounds to me like what you felt, and please correct me if I'm wrong, was missing from your 90-day program was those like mindfulness practices and the self-love and incorporating that balance of, can we make it kind of like cozy?
And, yes.
And also give ourselves that good stress.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah. And I think that we can. And I think that we should. And I think that that's really the way that, for me anyway, feels better. Because, well, I actually think it kind of depends, you know? Mm-hmm. If I really think about it, I think it could be both. And I think it depends on the type of person you are when you want to have a change in your life. Sometimes it's like, what's your incentive?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I was in pain.
Yeah.
Like I was in physical pain and I was done with it. Mm-hmm. It was so persistently annoying. Mm-hmm. And it was like water torture, a consistent, it was like a low grade, loud, consistent resonance 24/7. And I was just done. I'm like, I cannot live like I cannot live like this. Mm-hmm. It is so uncomfortable. And to me, that was sort of my turning point where I had tried everything else and nothing else was working. And I just really wanted something. I wanted to just try something else. And what's interesting is like, I thought I was doing everything right, you know, like working out every day, running, doing the high intensity workouts, you know, I was going to like Bunda. Remember? I mean, I was like going to Bunda, yeah. Like, twice a day. Like I was doing two workouts a day. I was, you know, eating what I thought was super healthy foods. And I was trying to get crowns on my Aura ring and taking my birth control, you know, because that was my hormone replacement. And none of it was working.
Yeah.
And so I think really there was a little bit of disbelief with how simple the program was for me, like how simple it was to lower my cortisol. It's like, just walk. Mm-hmm. So I changed instead of doing high intensity. Those of you that are new here, I've not really talked about this, but I have in the past, or if you follow me on social media, I swapped out everything that was jarring and intense to things that were a little bit low impact, longer periods of time. So I started walking. I would do 4 to 5 miles a day. So that equated to like anywhere from 10,000 to 12,000 steps mm-hmm. in a day. And I would do sometimes like 20-minute walk in the morning, a 20-minute walk in lunchtime, a 20-minute walk in the evening, just whenever I could fit it in. And just physiologically, that started to create the change that I wanted. And in a way, it was a little bit hard for me to believe how simple it was. Mm-hmm. In a way, it was kind of annoying how easy it was.
Yeah. You're like, why didn't I do this sooner?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know. The thing is, like, knowledge is power. It really is. Yeah. And you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And that's another reason why even us having these conversations, you and I have been talking about this for years.
Yeah.
And why we even started to talk about doing a show like this, because I think it was these conversations that really helped us learn to navigate what it is that we're going through, mm-hmm. you know, because ultimately at the end of the day, it comes down to wellness and it comes down to health. And even this conversation about body image and aging and self-worth, ultimately, if you don't feel like you look good, are you going to feel good? Mm-hmm. So it's not really a matter of, oh, in order to look, it's like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg?
Yeah.
Am I going to feel good because I look good? Or do I have to look good in order to feel good? Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. I mean, it's the question, what comes first and where do you start? I think it can be so overwhelming to know where to start. But if there's any takeaway from this or summary of this conversation, because it's very complex and it's layered and we've kind of gone a lot of different directions.
Yeah, so many. I hope that this actually comes out like one thread.
One cohesive thread. But yeah. I think there's something to be said for letting it kind of meander, because that's what our lives do and that's what we've done, and eventually we find our path. But what I'm getting to saying is, because it is a complex life that we live and it is layered and it isn't straightforward and it's not black and white, our kind of guiding truth through this that we keep coming back to and we keep talking about are the takeaways from today's conversation, which to me, they are remembering your why, understanding how to practice that kind of balance. And when I say balance, I don't mean like you're always in the middle. I mean like letting yourself swing to the austere, to the stress, to learning how to take that out of your daily existence for a while, like getting rid of the hit exercise and just going for a nice long walk and see what that does to your nervous system. So the balance can sometimes mean like let the pendulum swing to the side and then mm-hmm. let it come back to the other side. And then eventually it'll kind of like find its way to the middle. And throughout that, like, let it be a big grand experiment. Like what's going to happen today if I do this? How will I feel if I do that? I think that's for me, as I've been going through this journey, when I approach it from that lens of experiment, this sense of wonder, like, what does my body react to when I eat yes. this? I am so much less stressed out and I'm so much more willing to try again tomorrow. And it just has like a more peaceful result,
yes.
which to me is the goal. And it's what I want everyone to be able to experience and like know that. Yeah, it's daunting and it's scary and it's hard to try new things because of the unknown and because you don't know what the result will be. But try it anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. What a great way to end this episode. I am so grateful for you. What great questions. And look, it's a powerful topic. I think that we should continue to have these conversations in an honest and open way, because you know we're navigating. That's part of this process of aging and being able to go into a new phase of life doesn't always have to be bad. I think we can really find a deep sense of empowerment and confidence as we navigate this journey, and it's always better together.
Oh. Yeah. Cheers to that.
Cheers. Thank you all so much for tuning in to this episode of the Radically Well podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. If you're watching this on YouTube, leave us a comment and don't forget to subscribe to the show. And if there's any questions that you want us to answer, you can leave it in the comments or you can send it over to us at info@radicallyloved.com. Thanks so much for being here. Hey everyone, thanks for listening to the Radically Well podcast. This podcast is produced by Rosie Acosta and Tessa Tovar. Production by Sapphiris Media. Music by Monogram Sound. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No